Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
You know, Mark, following the uncertainty and upheaval of the virus, especially at the beginning of this year, March and April, We have seen historic lows in sales and activity, which has led to people wondering whether or not New York City real estate is a good place to come and invest.
That's right, Mona. I know real estate is an inefficient market. It's not like stocks. There's a set price and you just go and you purchase, buy or sell at that price. And a lot deals with the amount of volume. And I know since the amount of volume has gone down, there's some uncertainty. But that being said, it sounds like there may be some signs of change, perhaps a renaissance even.
A renaissance sounds like a perfect adjective. And we are honored today to have as a guest on our podcast, a person who can really speak knowledgeably to the current situation in New York City real estate market.
Today we have Arthur Rosenfield. Arthur, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mona.
Arthur, could you give us a little bit of your background on real estate?
Well, I'm particularly interested to talk with you today because talking about real estate is only part of the experience and knowledge that I bring to the discussion, because I was the founder of the Long Island City Astoria Chamber of Commerce, and I'm on the board of directors of the Greater New York Chamber of Commerce, and I've been an advisor for the past 10 years to the Caribbean American Chamber of Commerce. I'm on the board of the Asian Real Estate Association of America, and I look at things from the lens of not just real estate, but also those neighborhoods, those people, those small businesses that are part of the complexity of what makes New York City so exciting.
Didn't I tell you he was the most appropriate person, Mark?
You certainly did, Mona. And I love the fact that not only does he know New York City real estate, but he also has a grassroots, a neighborhood viewpoint level of all the diversity that makes New York City great.
Arthur, everything I'm reading right now, whether it's Bloomberg or you know, any of the other publications, it's all bad news about the New York City real estate market. Is this real? Are these overly dramatic reports? Have prices actually decreased?
I think that the things that you read in the press are sometimes what the press wants you to see and hear. There's certainly been a decline in transactions, a substantial decline in transactions, and a substantial decline in property values that actually started after some legislation was passed last year, not related to COVID.
Oh, so you're saying that pre-COVID there was a decline in the real estate market?
Pre-COVID, there was a decline in both transactions and values and pricing. Today, what we're seeing is a substantially higher decline, but we all understand the reason for it, which has nothing to do with anything anyone did. But there is a lot of uncertainty. And I think if you go back to the months of April, months of March, and you think about all of the uncertainty, I think the first thing in everyone's mind was, are you going to get this and are you going to live?
Yeah, that's a good point, Arthur. And just to make it clear for those listening, at the time of this recording, we're about 5.5 months since the initial coronavirus quarantine and the big epidemics first started hitting New York City. So depending on when you're listening to this, whether it's right away or years down the street, that's where we are right now.
Well, where we are right now is we have a much better understanding of what the impact of the pandemic has been. And we're moving from the continuum of completely uncertain to the other side of the spectrum, being completely certain and having some predictability in what values might be. We're moving along that path. And, you know, we're probably 50% along the path because we still don't have enough transactions for there to be confidence in value. But that being said, there are basics that are in play right now, which are very simple. A deal will happen when a buyer and a seller have a common ground and where two reasonable people have the right idea of what the value of property is.
I understand that, Arthur, from a macro view of real estate, but what does it really mean for New York City right now?
We're at a time when the city is under a lot of stress, not just in property values and transactions, but across the board. So the question really is, why do people want to live and work in the city of New York? And that's really the underlying issue here is paychecks and the great desire of people who want to be at the center of influence and the center of everything that goes on for them personally.
Okay. Yeah, but Arthur, there is a charm to being in New York City. I know we work there and we're there every single day in the heart of New York City. There is a charm to being close by Broadway and close by Central Park and in such a happening place. There is just so much energy there, which quite frankly, right at this moment, is not there. It's missing.
Well, whether it's missing right there today or not, I mean, I can remember many summers when it was missing. I mean, I've been living in New York City since the 1960s, and there are many summers when it's just been like a ghost town. You know, theater is not there, restaurants are empty. I mean, this is not an uncommon thing. Now, granted, it's worse today, and it's worse for a lot of other reasons, but what I'm saying is the demand for life in New York City and for the high quality of restaurants and for the high quality of theater and for the high quality of other people who are talented. And people come here from all over the world. It's the most diverse place on the planet and the most tolerant place on the planet. And people want to live here. Yeah. And it's because of that that people are going to flock back to New York City just as soon as they feel that they're comfortable and safe to come back to the city. So
that's so important because there are so many of our clients who are investors also in New York City real estate. And quite frankly, we have been receiving messages and we've been talking to investors who are like, I'm not sure I want to invest in New York City anymore. Is it as safe? And it was always a given, London, New York City, these were the places that you could always invest and always be sure that your money was safe.
Well, rather than dealing with some of the facts of real estate, let's deal with some of the basics of human nature. And the basics of human nature are that these problems must be solved. The crime problem must be solved. And the people who don't solve it won't get reelected. And the people who want to be living amongst the greatest talent pool in the world, who come here because they challenge themselves to be among the best, that's going to continue. And if a restaurant closes, there's going to be somebody with their grandmother's recipe from Romania who's going to open in that spot.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not just the cultural food, but also the cultural charm, right?
The charm is going to become even greater. Some of the larger box stores may close and be replaced by some very innovative young person's new way of producing lollipops or whatever, or a bakery. Don't judge real estate by strictly location and its current status. You have to look at human nature. Why do people want to live there? What creates the demand for your value personally? That's what's going to bring people back here.
So, Arthur, actually, what I'm hearing from you and Mona is you're both saying that New York is a desirable area. Just right now is a tough time, but eventually, possibly soon or possibly later, New York will return to that desirable thing where we have all the parks and all the theaters and all the restaurants and all the hustle and bustle and the celebrated diversity that New York City is known for.
Yeah, Mark, and when I and Arthur were speaking earlier, Arthur, you mentioned something that I think is so important, technology being the difference between recovery and perhaps being stale.
Well, you know, the people who are smart in the real estate business know that there's going to be a period of pain, and everybody understands it. The question is, how long will that uncertainty last, and when will the pain stop? I'm very active in not just real estate, but also in biosciences and life sciences, I watch very carefully what's happening there. And I can tell you that the clear difference between what's happening today and what's happened in the past with other pandemics or anything else is technology, the speed of development of medicines. We don't really actually have to wait for vaccine. People say, well, the vaccine. The fact of the matter is that we now have very, very quick detection, and we have very good therapeutics to interrupt your personal experience with whatever virus you might get. And technology is what's making that happen. And also technology is helping us to adapt in real estate to the impact of the pandemic, because there's a lot of technology with virtual tours and confidence in being able to close deals with contracts in a secure environment. So technology is changing everything. So no matter what it is, there is a technological solution today which is not needing to be developed. It exists, and it's just needing to be modified. Most of the things coming down the medical path are things that have existed for years. They're just being modified.
Well, Arthur, we recently covered technological innovations in the real estate industry just a couple months ago, about a month into the pandemic. Could you give us a recent example of a technological innovation perhaps we haven't heard of yet?
One was announced by Abbott Labs just yesterday, where they have like a $5 card that connects somehow into your cell phone, transmits data, and you get an immediate response. It has to go through a laboratory, but you get an immediate response. Well, just think about this. You know, we've been in a situation where people couldn't travel because they had 14 days of a quarantine.
Yeah.
And now, instead of traveling and then getting quarantined, you can use this card before you get on the airplane to prove that you don't have the virus. And therefore, we'll be able to move people around the way we were before. So it's a little bit like going through those magnetometers before you get on an airplane.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing.
It is amazing. And then if you do happen to get it, now the therapeutics are available to, the virus doesn't show up for 2 or 3 days. And if it shows up on the fourth day, then you have the ability to treat it and not be fearful that you're going to have to be in the hospital. You can just take some pills. So therapeutics and testing is actually as important as the vaccine, if a vaccine is ever available.
You know, Arthur, this is so true because, you know, New York City has had issues before with Superstorm Sandy and 9/11, but we haven't had the technology aspect of it. And it is interesting because we are looking ourselves at projects related to technology as opposed to the traditional real estate.
Well, Superstorm Sandy, which covered us with water, was devastating. And until that water receded, I mean, it's terrible. I remember walking into a restaurant that was a very popular one in Long Island City when I was the president of the Long Island City Astoria Chamber of Commerce. The water line was up to my shoulders.
Wow.
And then I remember Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney and I did a tour of Long Island City, and we were in the schools and we were in various locations, and the water lines were up 4 or 5 feet. So that's a physical thing. With this pandemic, the water hasn't been contaminated. There's still a supply chain for food. The buildings are still standing. The transportation systems are still in place. And so everything is there. We just have to go put those shoes back on.
Yeah. But let me ask you, and this is a question which we get asked a lot as well. Right now, everybody is aware that New York real estate is not at its high point. Is this a good time to have a project or be investing in New York City real estate, or should we wait for it to really get back to normal?
Well, I would answer that by saying it depends. If you have enough capital in your bank account, cash in your bank account to withstand 12 to 18 months, then it's a very good time to buy, as long as you're a good negotiator. And you're buying based on basics, and you're buying on a net appreciation of value over a period of time. You've done your proper homework. But the neighborhood, this is a city of neighborhoods. If you walk down Ditmars Boulevard in Astoria this Sunday afternoon, you would not know there was ever anything wrong. Everybody's out. Everybody's busy doing their things. If you go into Manhattan at 57th Street and Fifth Avenue, you know, you feel that something's wrong.
So New York City's diversity also contributes to how those communities react to this crisis.
We're a city of many different neighborhoods with tremendous diversity. We're also a city where we have a lot of executives and a lot of wealth and a lot of middle class people and a lot of laborers. So, there is no one homogenous city. So if you want to make an investment, you just have to believe in A, human nature, and that what drives value is human nature. And what drives value is people's confidence that they can come here and do better than they can anywhere else. And that's really, in my mind, the most important thing.
So the other question I have for you, Arthur, is should we be looking or should investors be looking at office deals as opposed to residential deals right now in New York City? Bearing in mind that at this particular point, the suburbs and upstate New York is doing extraordinarily well when it comes to the purchasing of real estate.
Well, everybody has a different style when they're investing in things. Most people are either large buyers of multifamily or large buyers of office space or industrial space. Industrial space was doing pretty well. The office space has been questionable. We still don't know whether people are going to be distancing or whether companies are going to be using the opportunity to downsize. But I would say overall, a year from now, New York City, as long as the political establishment rolls back the legislation that has created the fear on the streets of New York, which impacts everything, whether it's we're going to work, or going to shop in New York, or going to want to live in New York, as long as the legislators roll back the devastating impact of what they call criminal justice reform, which is bail reform and discovery and letting people out of Rikers, that's what's hurting New York, and that's what will slow it down. Technology cannot change that.
You know, Arthur, just yesterday it was announced by the SEC that their rules relating to accredited investors were relaxed, and a lot of it is due to COVID. Actually, some of the rules were relaxed prior to COVID coming in, but it certainly is timely. And what we see is that investors who would not normally fall under the ability to be able to make investments in private offerings, smaller private offerings, which may relate to real estate in New York, are now able to. So looking at that, I'm sure there are small groups of investors who are looking to see where can they get the best deal.
Well, I think you have two things going on. Number one, the federal government has been extremely responsive to the pain of the economy and trying to help create ways for capital to come into the economy so that jobs can be created and that investment can continue and that the economy can recover. So number one, let's just give a good check mark to the federal government. On the other side of the spectrum, people from all over the world want to live in America. The American dream is so important to everybody who has come here for 100 years. And that continues. And it's really a very, very important part of what's making the EB-5 program work and what's also making other things happen for people. And it's going to increase. The demand to want to live here in the United States is going to increase from Asia. It's going to increase from Europe. It's going to increase from many different sectors, from Africa, from everywhere, because we have the most stable government, the most stable business opportunities, the greatest job opportunities. And the way that the Trump administration has been creating jobs and the commitment to bring a lot of the manufacturing back to the United States, it's going to increase the interest in investing in the United States. It will become, once again, a manufacturing capital of the world.
Well, New York has been very democratic. I won't say that we are pro-Trump or pro-democratic, but
Whether you're pro-Trump or pro-democratic, it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that the government is going to facilitate returning manufacturing, it already has, from other countries to the United States. That is going to create a great demand for people to be employed and want to come here and be safer here. But once again, this all depends on how the governments around the country, including New York, deal with reversing some of the damage being done by the changes in law enforcement. We must have law and order in this country. It is one of the things that separates us.
Right. So it's interesting. Yesterday, we were speaking with a chap from Nigeria who really pointed out the fact that there are many Nigerians who want to invest here in the US and they want to have a project where they invest. So if we're talking about EB-5, for example, even if someone invests within EB-5, what we have seen is that many of these investors will put their own private funds into an alternative investment and invest far more than the capital required for EB-5. Say, so for example, if they have put $900,000 into a project in EB-5, they might put $3 million into a real estate apartment somewhere in New York City, for example. So that's where we really do gain from having this foreign investment coming into the country.
Well, as I said, everybody who invests has a comfort zone. You know, some people are interested in office space. Some people are interested in opportunity zones. Some people are interested in multifamily. Every different type of real estate class has its own issues with community boards, and you know, you always come down to local issues. If you're coming from Nigeria or anywhere, you really must make sure that in addition to your capital that you're investing, that you have worthy, competent people on the ground in the local communities who can help make that investment a sound investment and not have some of the problems that just come with blind investing. It just doesn't work that way. It doesn't work well that way. So there are professionals who work with people from other countries who want to invest here to help them find the right neighborhoods, so help them find the right professionals to deal with the local governments, et cetera. I mean, that's a very, very important point.
Arthur, you mentioned worthy, confident people, advisors to work with in the real estate market. You know, now is a perfect opportunity to talk about the work that you are doing with the National Realty Club.
The National Realty Club has a great history. It was founded in 1947 by Harry Helmsley. And, you know, that was immediately after the war. And New York City was, again, in one of those times when it had to make a lot of changes and create housing for veterans and everything else. Helmsley and his friends really structured something so that they could come together and in a very collegial way, exchange deals and understand what was going on in different parts of the market and the economy and the neighborhoods. You know, over a long period of time, it was a very, very prominent, successful real estate club. The people who were part of it were not just the property owners and investors, but also the circle of people around those investors, the professionals who helped to make things happen, the attorneys, the accountants, and title people, whatever. And that continued for a long time. During the pandemic, the organization was not in a position to have those kinds of private networking meetings, and which kept it to be a very successful organization. And I joined the board representing the Red Apple Group in January. And by June, I had really looked at this in the context of my other relationships with chambers of commerce, the Greater New York Chamber of Commerce and the Asian
Things have changed, right?
Arthur, the National Realty Club sounds very interesting. If any investor or someone who just wants to know more about real estate in New York, is it easy for them to come and join the National Realty Club?
It isn't very easy because you have to submit an application and be sponsored. But by all means, the club is open to principals and C-suite executives from outside the country. And we also have plans to open hubs around the country. So even though it is primarily New York City today, it will be more national and therefore able to help international investors who might be interested in Texas and Austin, Texas, or some of the other popular cities around the country that may be more to their style and appetite.
Well, Arthur Rosenfield, thank you so much for coming on EB5 Investment Voice and giving us a realistic look of what's been going on in the real estate market in and around New York City in the last few months, in the last few years, last few decades, as well as what you expect to happen in the near future. Again, thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome, Mark. Thank you. And thank you, Mona.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.